year or so ago, the Brits had a new research vessel which they wanted named, and it was going to go all over the Arctic and Antarctic. And so they perhaps now, on reflection, unwisely asked the British public, can you come up with a name for our new research vessel? What shall this boat be called? And the internet took a poll, and they came up with Boaty McBoatface. Boaty McBoatface was the winning name. Now, being the Brits, they kind of considered this, and the British government, and I knew what they would do, and they said, no, we're not going to call it Boaty McBoatface. Instead, we're going to call it the RSS Sir David Attenborough. So that's what they named it, because the Brits just don't do that sort of thing. But they did say, well, actually, the RSS Sir David Attenborough comes with a tiny little submarine which goes off by itself. We'll nickname that one Boaty McBoatface. So that's where you get Boaty McBoatface from. Interestingly enough, when they don't learn really, do they? The Manly Ferries in Sydney, they had a few new ferries, and they did the same thing. And what do you think was the top name that came forward? Yes, it was Boaty McBoatface again. Now, I don't think they went with it that time either. But, you see, people don't learn. Because then you get the Swedes, and the Swedes have got new trains. And they said, we'd like the internet to name the trains. And they came up with Trainy McTrainface. I don't make this up. This is news. But the Swedes went, okay, we'll call our train Trainy McTrainface. Because culturally, they didn't mind. I knew that Boaty McBoatface would never get through. Because the English were just not like that. They do that sort of daft stuff. The Swedes stride to it, that's fine. Because different cultures have different viewpoints about what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad. The same can apply to how people and cultures look towards various choices we make, which we would denote as sin. Within my working businesses in the UK, if you attempted to bribe somebody, that was one of the worst things you could do. Bribery is wrong. You shouldn't allow money to exchange hands and influence the decision that you're going to make for them. Quite clearly put within the UK society that I work within. Except, of course, when we moved to parts of Africa, where it was just necessary to get business done. And so some things which are disapproved of in one culture, in other cultures are just necessary to get going. How does a culture view sin? And so we come to the way the Jewish culture was viewing sin. And they had a very, very specific way of doing things. It became very compartmentalized. In fact, they even got to the point where they had designated class of people called sinners. They're sinners. We're not, they are. And within that, they basically got to this culture which said, certain people where bad things have happened have obviously had bad things happen to them because they sin. Other people who've had good things happen to them obviously have good things happening to them because they follow God. The logic goes like this. God gives good things to those who obey him. I've got good things, therefore I must be obeying God. You can flip it and you go, God punishes sinners with bad things. That person's got bad things happening, therefore they must be a sinner. It's called fuzzy logic. My dog has four legs. My cat has four legs. Therefore, my cat must be a dog. Do you get it? But it's ingrained within their society. If people are in problems, or if people are having bad things happening to them, there must be a reason because of it. And so, when they come upon this man who's blind from birth, the first question is not a mercy question, but the wise person be helpful to him? Is it any advantage to the Almighty if you are righteous? Would it be any gain to him if you were perfect? It is because you're so pious that he accuses you and brings judgment against you. Now it's because of your wickedness. There's no limit to your sins. And that's the sort of encouraging sort of thing you want your friends to come around and say to you when everything's gone wrong, isn't it? You know, you used to have a house, but it gets destroyed. You had kids, but they all got killed. You owned animals, but they all got stolen. And what you want is your friends to come around and say to you, it's because you're a sinner. That's why God's punishing you. And I know that you're a sinner. I know you keep denying it, but you are. But this is the culture they developed. It kept going through. And so Jesus comes in. And Jesus knows. He knows that there's a correlation between the actions of Adam and Eve and sin entering the world. He knows that humanity did this and sin entered in a general way. But he's not saying every specific wrong action is punished by God with an equal and equivalent bad thing happening. And in fact, he wants to quite clearly teach us and demonstrate to those who are following him, and thus now ourselves, that bad things also happen to good people. What he wants us to do is challenge our view of mercy. He wants us to do, as I said a couple of weeks ago, remind us that of all God's qualities, mercy shines brightest. And he wants people like you and I to become, as he was rightly struck with these disciples, people who view mercy as the primary way of looking at God's promise. What is it the Lord has told you to do? He's told you to do what is good. And this is what he requires of you, to do what is right, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Do we love mercy? Are we people whose default position is to be merciful to others? You see, all of this comes back to how we're expecting God to act. God, Jesus is trying to reset our view of God by resetting our view of sin. In the culture he's working, they think sin is just a punishment from God, and that proves you deserve it. And into that he says, no, that's not who I am. I'm a God of mercy. I love to see people repent. I love to bless. I know there was a mistake made at the very start. I know sin entered the world, but I've been trying to instruct you and say, I'm a loving God and I want to go back over that and correct it. Unfortunately, they got to a point within their thinking where it just became ingrained. So Jesus challenges that view of sin. So he wants to say, okay, this man is not blind because of any of his sins. And he's not blind because of any of the sins of any of his family around him. In fact, what's going to happen here is I'm going to show you God's glory. That's how we'll use this situation. He's not saying he's had to suffer all the time for being blind just so he can get to this one point and now I'll show you God's glory. He's saying, I'm here. I found a blind person. That's what the bringer of Jubilee does. I'm going to bring sight to the blind. And so what he does, spitting, adding mud, putting on his eyes, making sort of like a mixture of clay, as the imagery of Genesis gives us, where he takes the clay and forms humanity. Even though it's been marred by sin now, Jesus sits once again and covers back over with clay to bring a healing. And he says to him, go to the pool of Siloam. He says, be sent. I'm sending you to be sent. And as Christ was sent by the Father, so he's sent with this man. Go and act. Trust in what I've done. Jesus uses different methods of healing that we follow through the various different parts of the New Testament, and we hear the accounts that we find in Luke and Matthew. He heals in different ways. And he does so because he doesn't want us to get fixated on the method. Oh, it has to be this way, it has to be the other way. He wants us to get fixated very strongly on the message of the kingdom of God has come. Many years ago, apparently, from what I could tell, reading back about it, there was a group of people praying in the deep south of North America, but in the hot part. It was a really, really hot night. And so they wanted to pray for people and lay hands upon people. It was just too hot. And so what they did was they got the person there and they just stood nearby because it was too hot to put their hands on them. And then people started copying that, so it was something really holy and special. So lots and lots of people all over churches all over the world started doing this. Nothing special about the way. So you'll find Jesus does this in one particular part, but in other instances he uses different methods. What he's asking though is he's saying to this man, I want you to demonstrate your faith. I've told you what to do. Go and do it. But maybe we need to take a leaf out of his book and think to ourselves, what has God told us to do? Are we going to go and do it? If you want to follow God, just go and think about the last thing he told you to do and you didn't bother, and go and do it. That's faith. So we start with sin. I want to reset your view of sin, says Jesus. So the man comes back and then there's big discussion. Is this the guy? Is he healed? What's going on? Because this just doesn't happen. So eventually what they do is they send him off to the Pharisee. And the Pharisees basically go, hey, you shouldn't be doing that on a Sunday. In their case, it's Saturday. Because that's the important factor you want to take away from this, isn't it? Guy's been blind since birth and now claims to be able to heal. And their biggest issue is he did it on the Sabbath. This is how much they care about him. This is how much they're amazed by him. He did it when? I'm sorry, we've got a sign up here, a parking sign. No healing between these hours and these days, please. You know, that's just not what we're doing. Because once again, in their mind, they had reassessed and they said, the Sabbath is for this, this, and this. That's all you're allowed to do on it. In fact, they become trapped. Warren Wiersbe says they become one-issue type thinkers. It has to be within this prescribed formula of what it means. A formula that we've defined and we control. Because only within that can we maintain our authority over the people. If you read, the actual Pharisees are having a discussion. Is it him? Is it not? Sadly, we find the negative side wins out. So they go to the guy and say, are you really the bloke? And what they're getting at here is they think some sort of switch has taken place. Like Jesus planned this. You know, okay guys, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to find a guy who's blind. I'm going to do this thing on his eyes. We're going to send him off to the different sideline. And then we'll get a guy who looks similar to him and bring him back and he'll have eyesight. And that'll be a really clever thing. That's what they're getting at. Are you really the guy who's born blind? Are you sure? I wonder, do we get trapped ourselves between sin and Sabbath? there moping about, you know, woe between me, I need to be punished, oh, what a worm I am. Any sort of statement of that just denies the glory of the cross. And he doesn't want to resign us into a, oh, I'm only allowed to do X, Y, and Z on the Sabbath. He wants us to say the Sabbath was a blessing to God, to us. The Sabbath was made for man. What man for the Sabbath? And whilst I think we should try and make an effort on Sundays in our particular case, but the Sabbath for other faiths within Christianity, that we should try and make a focus about who God is within our life, then we should get too fanatical about it. Because we shouldn't be tied up. Because we get to the point, and it's still sadly the case with many, many Jewish people today, that certain things can't be done. You can't light a match on the Sabbath if you're a Jewish person. And so you can't turn on your oven, because that's not what I do there. You get your neighbour in, who's a Gentile, they can do it for you. I kid you not, this is how you get around it. How tight do you get yourself bound to these rules and regulations? And here's Jesus. Oh, he's breaking all of them. Because he's working, and he's digging, he's mixing, because he went, just broken the Sabbath, doing that little bit of work there. That's the point they're annoyed at. But he's digging up. You're not allowed to dig on the Sabbath. Then he goes and uses it to heal someone. Amazing, you know? Let's forget that whole bit. Let's worry about the fact he worked on the Sabbath. In the UK, they have loads and loads of Sunday trading laws. They're clearing them up, but you know, all sorts of weird use of things. I suspect we've probably got a few carried over when we set things up over here. Things like, you can buy a razor on a Sunday, but you can't buy the blades. That's clever, isn't it? It used to be illegal for a traditional English fish and chip shop to open on a Sunday. But if you happened to be a Chinese takeaway which sold fish and chips, that was okay. Probably the worst one of all is you could buy men's magazines on Sunday. Men's magazines is a euphemism, I'll let you go where there. You weren't allowed to buy a Bible. You know? All sorts of things used to go like this because of what the confusion was. Is what were you meant to be doing on a Sunday? How do you regulate it? Jesus says, we're meant to be here doing good. We're meant to be here blessing people. In his particular instance, he says, we must do things whilst it is day, because when night comes, we won't be able to do things anymore. It means, I must be about this business while I am, before I come to my trial and crucifixion. Because then I won't be able to do anything, I'll be working through you. So you and I need to be thinking, how do we use our time to be blessed? That should be who we are defined. Christians, people of blessing. So we talked about sin. And then we talk about Jesus resetting Sabbath, demonstrating all the time it's meant to be about God blessing people and bringing the new jubilee into people's lives. Then I want to get to a third one, which is society. Because as I was reading about this passage, the thing which struck me most is the sense of fear that this blind man's parents are suffering from. So they get his parents up, and they stand them, and they say, is this your son? He's been blind since birth. He's now healed. He can see. Consider what it must be like if you have had a child and they've suffered and struggled and had problems, and suddenly that's removed and it's been cleared up and it's been set right. was struggling, what was wrong, all that's been cleared up. Don't you think you'd be giving praise, but not this two people? They immediately fold. And they go, no, no, don't ask us. Ask him. He's of the age. He can answer the question. And the text even says the reason they did this is they were scared because they know if they gave the wrong answer, they would be thrown out of the whole of the area. This couple, I'm putting forward, is so hounded, so oppressed, so caught that they have no backbone left. And in some ways, who could blame them? Because you've got to look back to the original statement. Is this man blind because of his sin or his parents? You see, you've had a blind child, so you too must have sinned somewhere along the line. Look at those two over there. They're the child. They're the parents of the child who's blind. They're the sin. And that's how they become defined within the society around them. I wonder whether the sinning you don't want to catch whatever they do wrong, do you? I wonder whether they've got close friends or whether they're just ostracized at home. I wonder if they've been left for many, many years, not only struggling with how do you cope with a blind child, because there's no social security, but you just get labeled and denoted as the sinners. And worse than the fact that you don't even get any help, you actually get punished for it. Oh, they deserved it. So we can all look on and feel very good about ourselves because we didn't. Do mercy, God says. So there's their child finally being healed and so backed up, so oppressed that they immediately sidestep the question and pass it back to them. And so they ask him again. Now there's no unbiasedness about them anymore because they basically say, we know this man is a sinner, talking about Jesus. They're just giving the whole game away. That's interesting, he says. You know that man's a sinner? Well, I couldn't tell you about that. What I do know, though, is that God doesn't listen to sinners, and he's healed me. Who's ever heard of God bringing sight back to the man? But here I am. So therefore, if God doesn't listen to sinners and I've been healed, this man must be from God. Going from fuzzy logic to correct logic, they find themselves challenged. The Pharisees find themselves put in their place and they're not happy. Get out, you're a sinner from birth. And they threw him out of the synagogue. How many times in society do we refuse to stand up and allow people to be battered and bruised and beaten? How many times in society do we just stand back and just watch the wrong thing being done? Because we don't want to get involved. Over to you. You do. You see, followers of Jesus Christ need to stand up and say, followers of Christ need to reach out to those who've been ostracized and say, we love you anyway. Followers of Christ need to say that God's mercy will be demonstrated through our hands. Because we will understand that even though bad things happen, it doesn't denote you as unsavable. Because sin will not be dominating our view of who people are. Jesus Christ. We will say that we will do these things on any day of the week because we're not saying Sabbath means we do nothing. In fact, Sabbath is the exact opposite. And these days we will doubly bless people. And then we'll also say we're not going to subject ourselves to the vagaries and the thoughtlessness of society. notice that the text does not say at this point Jesus goes, "Hey, don't worship me, just worship God alone." Not at all. Jesus accepts that because he's God. And you should worship him. And so this man himself, he says he was blind, but now sight has come. And Jesus says, "I've come to give those who are blind sight. I've come to give those who didn't know about who God is the knowledge of God. I've come to take those who in humility can admit in their weakness that they can't save themselves. And I will save them." The Pharisees are listening. They save themselves. Are you talking about us? Are you calling us blind? We're not blind. And Jesus, in his usual non-confrontational manner, "Well, you know, the problem is, since you're claiming to be able to see, you've just brought your own judgment upon yourself." Friends, we need to consider our own lives. We need to think about things. So here are some questions to ask yourselves. What preconceptions about God are preventing us from seeing clearly? "Oh, God doesn't act in that particular manner. He doesn't do this. Yet he comes over here. That's the way God operates, nowhere else." Ask yourself, if you were to describe God, how would you describe him to somebody else? Challenge yourself, what are your views on sin and mercy? How do you view the Sabbath? What do you do with it? Are there pressures from our society that we form and conform to which we shouldn't? Which ones do we resist and we